interesting calls coming in. A couple of you had the same reaction that that I was having, and which is why I was sort of getting at it. The call from Earl about SUVs in 1957, and I don't think they had any SUVs in 1957, but it may have been some sort of a military type version, a Jeep or something like that that he was talking about. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. A lot of folks on the phone lines. Good call so far. We'll get back to the lines in just a moment. I'm George Knapp in tonight for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. We go now to Ben in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Good morning, Ben. Thanks for spending time with us.
Hey, Ben. I mean, hey, George. Oh,
hey.
Hey, okay. Listen, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of my sleep paralysis experiences that I've had, and I love it when I've been listening to Coast to Coast for a long time, and anytime somebody calls in and talks about sleep paralysis, like, I always want to hear what they have to say about it, because I've probably had 50 to 100 different episodes like that over my life. But I also wanted to leave a real quick comment, if I could, about the caller that called it before. His name was Jason, I think, where he was asking the question, like, will we ever get disclosure on aliens and things like that? And, you know, I think we need to look sometimes at just how, at the neural level of things with our bodies. I mean, we know so much now about neuroscience and the whole mind and matter thing. To really picture that aliens are going to consist in the way that we can conceive them to be in our reality. Maybe we need to look a little bit past that. Communication happens between all kinds of organisms at the neurological level, and it's pretty amazing. But anyhow, I can't really think too much about that. But I want to talk about my sleep paralysis, and I've had probably 50 to 100 of these different episodes. And
when did they start? How young were you when they started?
Oh, I can't even remember how young I was when they started. They were actually a lot scarier when I was younger, and it would start out, I would somehow make this transition from the actual dream state to all of a sudden it was like I could feel my consciousness starting to wake up, and I would feel myself in the bed and instantly feel like a lead blanket gets laid completely over my body. I can't move, I can't speak, can't open my mouth, my ears, or anything. And I'll even sense, and when I was younger, I would hear footsteps running. And this is some freaky stuff, but I would hear footsteps running onto my bed. I would feel my bed pressed down, something get up on it. Sometimes it would be something on my chest, or I would feel intense breathing, and there would be nothing I could do to get out of this. Be, you know, maybe 2 to 3 minutes, and I would reach this point where I'd feel like, I just got to kind of let go. And maybe it's going to take me, who knows? And then all of a sudden, you just slip out of it, you can start moving, and you're there. And it's really crazy. I've done some research in the past few months about this. There's a lot of people that have had the same experience. And some actually believe that's actually the exit stage where you can exit your body. I don't know if you've heard some stuff about that.
Well, sure. I mean, in fact, I was going to ask you, have you ever tried astral projection kind of stuff?
Yeah, well, I looked at that. I did. I practiced it. It's actually very simple, and I think that anybody can do it. I did it twice, but I'm telling you, you do have to have a lot of self-control, because what you kind of want to do, the method is, you know, sometimes we just go to sleep, all right? But if you lay in your bed and lay there stillless, and usually on your back, for some reason it works if you're on your back, you'll start to experiencing these different sensations, like you're floating, like if you've ever, you know, been asleep and you suddenly get that shock, like you come to, that's because you were starting to get this kind of floaty feeling or a spinning feeling. And it's just, it's amazing. I'll feel like I'll fly 1,000 miles up in the sky and then 1,000 miles down, your heart starts racing and you really need to try to calm it down. But, you can get to this place to where all of a sudden there's like this transition that takes place and you feel this vibration and you can hear it and it's different every time, but you can really freak out and panic. And I think that's where some of the negative, entities or whatever that you can tend to experience, I think that's where those come from. But, you know, I just told myself to chill out, relax, and these vibrations, man, they come in waves. They're nuts and you can't move. But if you don't freak out, and you try to, like, just think and concentrate on moving, maybe move your hand up a little bit or something like that. And all of a sudden, man, it worked one time. And my wife was right next to me in the bed. And I sat up, I finally got out, and I was just like, whoa, I'm out. But it was at that point in time where it was almost like I started to lose any intentions that I had of wanting to be outside of that place. It was like it started to fade into a dream state to the point where I couldn't remember it anymore. And then all of a sudden I was asleep and I woke up. But, you know, I don't know. It's really nuts.
Well, I don't know that it's universal, but it certainly is widespread, that feeling of sleep paralysis. It seems like pretty much everyone has had it to one degree or another. What it is, I think it's probably a little more complicated than what some of the psychiatric professionals would like to tell us. They use sleep paralysis, as you probably know, as a way to explain away alleged alien encounters, abduction experiences. They tell people that the things that you think you were experiencing while you were paralyzed or really dreams, that you were in a dream state, not really awake. I think it's dismissive and it's unfair to just explain it away with a wave of one's hand, because some of the experiences, as have been reported on this program, are a lot more complicated than just a dream. And some of them have left the physical evidence behind. I mean, as you know, it's all mixed up in alleged alien abductions, which makes a lot of psychiatric professionals uncomfortable. They'd like to explain it away rather than deal with it. I don't know if it's a dream state or if it's some sort of a doorway to another reality. I have had good friends of mine who say that they've been able to astrally project themselves. I remember a guest that we had on the program not that long ago, Dr. Raymond Moody, who's studied near-death experiences. Some of the stories of people leaving their bodies and traveling elsewhere, they come back and get in their bodies again, and they can recall details of where they were. They can tell us about places they visited where they've never been in their waking lives. It's hard to explain away, but I'm certainly intrigued by it. I appreciate you sharing your experiences with us, Ben. Brian in Lakewood, Washington. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, how you doing there, mister?
Okay.
You know, there's a bunch of stuff going on, you know, about that soldier. And there's a lot of stuff people don't realize. This is war. You know, right here, you know, I was a youngster up in the hilltop, Tacoma, Washington, in the early 80s. It's like guerrilla warfare there. You know, they had helicopters up in there. And, you know, here in Lakewood, you got a bunch of soldiers out here. They're like us. But they're going and doing things we can't perceive it. It's different paradoxes, parallels. You know.
Well, I know that, you know, so much of the world is ready to string this guy up. It's hard to do that until you've walked a little ways in his shoes. The troops that are there, the kinds of things they go through. I mean, you're not fighting against an enemy where everybody wears uniforms. It's hard to tell.
That's right. But look at the dude that's out here on the street. You know, it's trying to survive. You know, we go through our own different war. And, you know, like, everything gets twisted up. And I think it's all about, you know, people want to bring up racial stuff. Well, I think it's all about attitude. Everything needs to be put in perspective. What's your perception of it?
Well, my perception is that maybe we've been in Afghanistan too long. When you've got guys on the ground who are facing life and death situations, stressful situations every single day, you don't know who the enemy is, who your friends are. You're getting shot at and you're driving over bombs in the road. Your judgment may be impaired at times. And if you're doing tour after tour after tour, it can get to you. And I can imagine that there are people that have breaking points, and maybe that's what this guy faced. And, you know, if you're looking for a larger lesson, maybe it's this. We've been there too long, and we're putting our men and women, our fighting forces, our heroes in harm's way, and not for a really good perceived reason. And maybe it's time to get the heck out of there. Thanks for the call, Brian. Appreciate it. East of the Rockies, Joe in Baltimore. Hi, Joe. Joe's gone. How about west of Allen and Folsom?
Oh, hi, George.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing great, and I think you're probably my favorite host, especially when you do UFO things.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're really good. I just love listening to all the UFO things. But that brings me to my question, which was, you know, I watch on TV a lot when they interview the guys that were in the service, and sometimes they're still alive. And I'm pretty sure that some of them say that above the hangars, it was like right around when that when they had the crash, it was like right above the hangars, they had silver globes up there. It was either like just before or just after the crash. And I was just wondering if you have the memory on that. And these were the airmen seeing them there. And the other thing is,
Hold on a second, Alan, before we move on. Are you talking about sort of Wright-Patterson or?
No. The Roswell, at the Roswell base.
Right.
The hangars. Right above them, they seen them there. They were like the silver globes, you know, chrome globes. They're like, you know, 4 to 6 feet across. I think they said something like that. But I can't remember for sure the time, if it was just before or just after the crash happened, you know, when they went to get the wreckage.
I don't remember any accounts of craft right over the hangars of the base. I know that there were reports of things in the sky in the general area, but I don't remember of them right over the base. You've read that, though, huh?
I think I've seen it on TV, and I've read it, and, you know, I listen to anything UFO, and I think I've seen it on TV when the airmen actually have said it, or either that or it came from Stanton Friedman and some of the researchers reiterated it, but it was the real airmen, you know, that were stationed there had seen them. And they weren't like far above, just maybe 100 feet or less above the hangars, either just before or just after they had been seeing these things. And I just wondered so you don't even have any more detail on that. Maybe some of the listeners could verify that or send some emails to you, and then you could report back. But do you remember also what year was it that Condor and
Falcon?
Yeah, we're on TV. That was a long time ago, but I can't remember what year it was.
1988.
You know, they never showed that again, I don't think.
No, and that was quite a milestone of a program. I remember watching it and watching it on tape afterward. A lot of speculation about who those guys were. Some of them allegedly were people who have appeared on this program as our guests.
I was glued to the set, and I wish they would have played it again or even snippets of it. But so of what you know of it, how much do you believe of it? Or,
well, I think it, as with everything, especially in this wild and wacky field, you take everything with a grain of salt. You listen, you keep an open mind about it, and then you wait for more proof. I remember that one of the things that came out of that program was the statements about the alien who was captive, who had a preference for strawberry ice cream, which is the kind of detail that would stick in your head long after.
Now, I remember that also.
Yeah, there's no way we can verify it. There's no way we can prove it.
No.
I'm sure that there are people who are listening who have insight into the real story. I hope that they will call in. Alan, I appreciate your call. Try to get one more call in before the break. A first-time caller, Will in Oregon. Hi, Will.
Hello, George.
Hi.
How's it going?
Have I got the right name? What's your name?
Will.
Okay. What's going on?
I want to say, first off, I am a first-time caller. This is neat. Ben's story about astral travel was really great, very inspiring. I loved it. And what I wanted to talk about tonight was a guy that I heard on Coast to Coast a couple days ago, an author, Shock, S-H-O-C-H. And he spoke about Atlantis, and my question kind of was, he also spoke about how Edgar Cayce had some readings regarding Atlantis, and I want to know how the story about the Anunnaki putting spirits into apes fits into the kind of story, like, where in the timeline is that happening? As far as some people are putting Atlantis as far back as 50,000 years.
Yeah, I'm not an expert on that stuff. Why don't you tell me more about this Shock person? Has he written a book, or what program did you see this on?
He has. I'm not sure what program. I'm a pretty new listener to Coast to Coast. But I think he was a geologist, and that's why he had the specific information about timelines and how Atlantis ended at the end of a major ice age.
And where does he say Atlantis was?
It was an island in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean.
Okay.
With technology that he claims would be sort of more on the telepathic road than the machinery road, utilizing kind of metals and jewels in a way that we can't quite understand. But I don't know. My question really involves how do you fit aliens into the timeline of the development of, you know, bipedal apes?
Well, I don't fit them in there. I don't know enough about it to even guess. I do know you mentioned Edgar Cayce, and I give him a lot of credence. I think that's a really interesting guy, and that what I've read, and it's not a lot, but what I've read, he was really tapped into something. I mean, and so much of what he predicted came to be true, and of course, he was a major figure in the whole story about Atlantis. I've read the same kind of things that you have, that maybe aliens have helped mankind along, that they've given us a little boost here and there in the evolutionary scale of things, but I don't have any proof of that. I mean, I don't know that anybody does. Do you?
Edgar Cayce actually has a very interesting viewpoint on that, that you could read as aliens or not, depending on, you know, how you take it. But his story is that spirits, which came from the, you know, eternal oneness that is before everything, the spirits broke off and became conscious of themselves, and at that point they experienced the universe, and when they saw Earth, they experimented with the life forms there and kind of weren't really attaining a state that they were happy with, and so he said they had to Anthropoid ape was the closest thing that they had to, you know, what was a more accurate representation of the physical form that they would take, the spirits. And so they made this anthropoid ape more suitable to them by teaching them, but not inhabiting the bodies, until they were suitable vehicles, which is a pretty strange sort of thing to try to fit into your whole view.
Well, yeah. I mean,
I also give Cayce a lot of credence, so I'm just trying to fit it all together.
Well, you're talking over my head, I think, a little bit. I'm as interested in this as the typical coast-to-coast listener, maybe not as knowledgeable as you are on this stuff. I try to keep an open mind on this, but I would have to say that those are pretty exotic theories, and I don't know how we would ever prove any of them. I'm not sure it's provable.
What is your show usually about, George? Did I go way off topic?
No. That's perfectly, that fits perfectly. It's just that happens to be a subject I'm not really well versed in, but it perfectly fits. And you're calling in, and you can talk about anything you want. So you're right at home here.
I'm very glad that I got to talk about that for a minute. And I want to say that the little Buddha nature in me smiled really big when Ben talked about astral projection.
Have you done that?
No, but it's just a very beautiful whole thing. And yes, I have. I'm not sure if it's happened in this life or in any time that I remember, but.
Well, you're jumping over my head again. I appreciate the call, Will. That was pretty interesting information there. Stay with us, everyone. Back to the phone lines in a moment. I'm George Knapp, and tonight for George Norrie on Coast to Coast AM. I should also mention, we got a couple of messages from listeners who told me about SUVs, that something that looked a heck of a lot like SUVs had been around for a long time. We had them in the 50s. One listener says that we had them back in the 30s, that they didn't call them SUVs back in those days, but that they looked just like it and were used by the military. So, Earl, if you're still listening, our apologies, and you may have known what you were talking about there. Anyway, we're going back to the phone lines. They're pretty much full. And we'll talk about whatever is on your mind here on Coast to Coast AM. By the way, I got the snippets of a breaking news story concerning the International Space Station. I'll try to get more details for you, but apparently they're tracking a piece of space debris that looked like it was on a collision course with the ISS, and they're taking steps to either try to do an evasion maneuver or perhaps evacuate the crew, put them in the Soyuz, get them the heck out of there. I'll try to get more details for you as we go along. Back to the phone lines. Frank in Colorado Springs, Colorado, on the Wild Card line. Hi, Frank. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Listen, I got to tell something. I have spent time with an alien. I have proof that, I don't know how to say this, but we are all spiritual beings in a physical body, and we're now learning how to tap our true potential.
I'm there with you on that. That sounds reasonable. What's your proof?
It would take me a while to tell you, but one of my websites, Think Tank Now, goes into all the details, it's truly amazing. But we are all like I say, we're spiritual beings in a physical body, and even the aliens are in the same boat. We're all working on the same project. We are actually conscious spiritual beings in formation. We're actually consciously evolving ourselves.
Well, Frank, I mean, I don't think anybody would argue with that. I don't think it's particularly a new sort of a conclusion. I think a lot of people, all millions of people all over the world already believe this. Do you want to tell me in a nutshell what your proof is, or should we move on?
Well, my proof is that I've used my own body, and I've eliminated all of my diseases. I've eliminated arthritis, cancer, on and on, severe allergies, it's so hard to explain it in just a few minutes, but.
Well, I'll tell you what, that's an interesting topic. Maybe we'll contact you and talk about having you back to discuss it in your greater detail. I don't think it'd be fair to all the folks who are hanging on the phone lines to go into a real long discussion of it, but you mentioned your website. Anybody interested can check it out. Thanks, Frank, for the call. A Wild Card Live, Brian in Florida. Hi, Brian.
Hey, how are you guys?
Oh, okay, how's it going?
I have to tell you that I have heard every night, I have Anaya that speaks to me, and he tells me that this species is a very special species, and that when you lay down and some of the species feels that you can't move and you feel as if you're awoke, it's because we are amongst you, we walk amongst you, and we're cloaking. And when we cloak, we don't mean any harm. We just don't want to have you to rise. And when we leave, then you're able to wake up and stand up and walk. I got to tell you that your species is a very special species. Only a selected few, like Illuminati, has had everyone to feel as if everything is everything. But in all actuality, progress has taken place. They are planet hopping. All of the Russians and the Chinese government act as if they don't get along. But in essence, they meet amongst each other, and they basically have one thing in common. They are both, all of them together, are planet hoppers. They leave to other planets, and they have already started to artificial inseminate and create human beings on other planets. They leave you guys all together in one box to make you feel as if everything is just moving in a slow process. And at the same time, they've mastered finding different planets. Beyond the time of Anunnaki, the Mayans have known this. The Mayans have basically planet hopped and moved among the stars.
Brian, are you saying that you're one of them? You keep talking about us. Does that mean you're them?
I have to tell you, I admire your species, but I am not amongst you. I am here in flesh. We are in your government. We're beyond shapeshifters. The government, the ones that's above you, the governments around the world, we have infiltrated the government. We are only interested
okay.
on this
okay.
Earth.
All right. All right. Thank you. Thanks. I hope you enjoy your visit here, and hope you can stay while you're hopping, before you hop somewhere else. Thanks, Brian. Justine in Kismet, New York. Hi, Justine. Good morning.
Oh, hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well, I don't know how I can top the last one, but...
Please don't try.
Take you somewhere a little different. I wanted to talk about a letter that 33rd degree Mason Albert Pike wrote to another Mason named Mazzini back in August 15th, 1871. It might help us put together, a few more pieces of the puzzle here. He outlines what he calls a need for three world wars to achieve New World Order. This letter was actually on display at the British Museum Library for a while. He says that the First World War, the main purpose is supposed to break up the Tsarist rule, establish Russia as a communist atheist stronghold. The Second World War intended to be a clash between fascist and political Zionists to establish a state of Israel and to continue building up communism to be used as a catalyst. The Third World War that they want is, he calls it a clash between political Zionists will clash with leaders of the Muslim world. He says they will destroy themselves but remain nations. They'll fight to economic and political exhaustion. After World War III, they intend global and social cataclysm to be provoked greater than the world has ever known, one of the results of which will be destruction of both Christianity and communist atheists. At that point, he says, the multitudes, this part I'll quote, the multitudes disillusioned with Christianity, anxious for an ideal but without knowing where to render its adoration, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer brought finally out in public view. So apparently this pure light needs three world wars to get going.
So when was this letter written?
August 15th, 1871. There's actually, it's in a book. I didn't read this book, but it's supposed to be in a book by William Carr, C-A-R-R. He was a former intelligence officer with the Royal Canadian Navy, and he wrote a book called Pawns in the Game. And this is supposed to be excerpted from it. I thought it was pretty interesting.
Well, it is interesting. I'd love to know sort of the provenance of that of the letter, when it was written, and how this guy found it. And I would think that that World War III stuff that breaks out there, it not only destroys Christianity and Zionism and communism and atheism, it destroys everything. I'm not sure that a world war that there's anything left. Agreed.
Yeah. Well, that's what he says, that their intention is to do all this systematically to achieve their New World Order. So they were talking about this. This letter was written August 15th, 1871, and apparently this William Carr found it at the British Museum Library on display. I don't know if it's still there, but, he did include it in this book called Pawns in the Game, which I can't wait to read.
Yeah, I would say that if World War III is a nuclear war, that the Illuminati, the New World Order, they're going to be, I don't know what they're fighting over, dirt clods and rubble. That's pretty much all that would be left. But I would appreciate it, Justine, if you email me something about that letter or list little contact info, and I'll look it up. That's pretty interesting stuff.
Okay, I'll remind you, sure.
All right, thank you. Appreciate it. Chris in Pennsylvania on the wild card line. Hi, Chris.
Hi, George. Hey, I called during the prediction show in January with this. People, just didn't listen to what I was saying. But I'm under grave threat from dark forces for revealing this information. And I feel that this is going to come to pass this year. And my contention is that King Midas, the ancient King Midas, is the Antichrist. And he was turned by the devil into palladium. Yes, palladium. And humans were turned into gold, and animals were turned into silver, and the fallen angels and Nephilim were turned into platinum.
You're saying that you made this prediction in January and no one took you seriously, huh?
Yes. And I'm saying that the truth, the knowledge of good and evil is the gold, are these precious metals. The lust for gold succeeds the rage of conquest. It was the first and the last corruption of degenerate man. And I'm saying this is the devil's master plan. Since he's confined to Earth, the only way that he can spread his plan throughout the universe is that, and Zechariah Sitchin wasn't far off with his predictions with the Anunnaki who came here to mine gold and such, that the aliens came here and they got to know the knowledge of good and evil through these precious metals. And they were taken, all these precious metals were taken back to their homelands. And I think this year, every race that's existing in the universe will have this metal. And the devil, this is the way that he can spread through the universe and overcome his confinement to Earth. And he's going to unleash the palladium back to King Midas and the gold back to the humans and such. And they're going to be the overseers of our world until the second coming of Christ.
Okay, so there's not much we can do about it, huh? It's going to happen?
Unfortunately, I don't think so. I mean, get rid of your gold, silver, platinum, and palladium.
Get rid of it.
I mean, really, what worth is it to us? It's just that knowledge of good and evil. Gold and those precious metals, they really have no worth.
All right, Chris, thanks for the warning. We appreciate it. And thanks for the prediction. Jim in Denver, are you there, Jim, on the wild card line?
Yes, this is Jim in Denver, yes.
Yeah, when we say wild card lines, we're not kidding. They're wild.
Okay, well, I have a friend in New York. I called him up the other day. The time here was 8:59 p.m., and I called him. We usually talk about three or four subjects at a time, and I know I talked to him for about 15 or 20 minutes. He's in New York. After I got done talking to him, I hung up the phone, and my clock said 9:03. So what happened to my time between 8:59 and 9:03? About the 15, 20 minutes I was talking on the phone, I lost 15, 60 minutes from where in a time warp.
I don't know. I mean, we read a lot about time slips, things of that sort. I don't know. What's your guess?
My guess is it's been happening to me quite often about time warps, time slips, and it happens about a couple times a month to me.
And why is it happening?
In the shower. Well, she was in the shower at 6 a.m., and she came out of the shower, and I was talking to her for about 10 or 15 minutes, and she said, well, what time is it? It was 6 a.m. again. So I don't know how this happens. I mean, I keep on losing time, but the time I spend, I know it's like half an hour, 15, 20 minutes. I lose it somewhere, and it's the same time I see when I was at the get-go, when I started, or like I said, my friend in New York. I remember the one time this first started happening to me back in 1993. I was in my car driving west going towards Billings, Montana. I passed Billings, Montana. I was going to go up to Helena, Montana. And on the way up there, I saw a lake and kids, on Mount Beach off the side of the road. And that's the last thing I remembered. The next thing I remember, my car was turned around going back the other way, going east. And we lost a time, an hour and a half, a time slip or time warp. And we were really, really super tired. I was so tired, my eyes were hurting.
Jim, tell me this. When this happens, when you notice that time has slipped away from you, you're conscious the whole time. It's not like you go somewhere else or you black out or something. Right? You're conscious the whole time? It just seems to have gotten away from you somehow?
99% of the time, yes.
What about the other 1%? Are you having blackouts or gaps in your... No?
Never had a blackout.
Well, you said... All right, 99% of the time when this happens, you're conscious and you're... Oh, what about the other 1%? What happens in the other 1%?
The 1%, I think that was the one in when I was going to Helena, Montana. That was out for like an hour and a half. My wife was in a car with me, so was my child. And the next thing, an hour and a half later, it was an hour and a half later, we were heading back east towards Billings, Montana, and I think we were abducted at that one time.
Well, that's sort of what came to mind. I mean, it sounds like what has been reported by a lot of abduction victims, folks who they not only lose time, they sort of black out and they don't know what happened to them during that period. Now, you're going in the other direction?
Yeah, I was going west, and then an hour and a half later, according to my watch, we were heading east in my car.
Did you ask your wife if she had the same memory? Did you ask your wife about it?
Yeah, she said she didn't know what happened either. She was real tired. She didn't know what happened. We lost an hour and a half, and we were going the opposite way. But I think I know what happened, because I think we were abducted, and I was on like a table, and there was a couple of aliens around me. And I asked, well, who was my wife? Was my daughter, my little baby girl? They said, well, she's okay. Don't worry about it. And I was kind of half conscious. And I said, well, I got a very strong willpower. I could, you know, see my, I could move my fist, like, look, fist. And I punched this little alien right in the eye. He flew backwards. And the head taller alien says, that's it. Take him back. He's too hostile. I mean, after that.
I'll tell you what, if I were you, I mean, I'm sure that there are some reputable professionals in the Denver area there who've dealt with these kinds of cases. If there are not, you might want to consider doing a little hypnotic regression session and see if you can retrieve some other memories from some of those other times when time sort of got away from you. You have a conscious memory of an encounter, a violent encounter with other beings. That's pretty dramatic stuff.
Yeah, who would I contact?
Well, let's figure it out. I'll tell you what, you send me an email here at Coast to Coast or at KLAS TV, and I'll get some recommendations of somebody in your area who might be able to talk to you. But it's if I were you, I'd be dying to know what really happened. And hypnotic regression is not always reliable, but if you get the right person and knows what they're doing, it can shed a lot of light on these kind of experiences.
I'm a pretty conscious person, but you know what? After that incident, I looked at my right arm, and I had a perfect scar of a pyramid on my right arm and a perfect circle above the right side of the pyramid on my right arm.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good case. I mean, some of the best...
I've never done before.
Yeah, some of the best documented cases, people like Bud Hopkins and David Jacobs have reported those kinds of markings on people who've had an abduction experience. So it sure sounds like something dramatic and important happened to you. And we can try to help hook you up with somebody who can do a regression in a professional sort of way. Thanks for the call, Jim. Thanks to all the callers. A lot of interesting stuff here on your minds tonight, folks. I'm George Knapp in tonight for George Norrie. We're taking a break, and we'll be back with more of your calls after this.